very much, and it's lovely to be here, and I really am sorry I have to go early. I hope I don't miss seeing what other people are doing. So in a minute I'm going to stand up and start clicking through a website, but I thought I'd just really briefly explain. Smart Lab exists to provide technology to communities which are underserved by industry, education, and all normal funding bodies. So we exist deliberately in the margins between spaces and lobby for funds, and then give our software away. So we used to work at Open University BBC for 8 years. A whole bunch of us left there about 10 years ago, went to the University of Surrey, set up an institute there called the INPR, worked there for 4 years, then went to Central St. Martin's, which is where we're based right now. But we have sister sites in Dublin, Phoenix, Arizona, LA, New York, and Fez, Morocco, and are always looking for new partners. So I'm sorry I have to kind of rush through this presentation, but I just want to really invite people, if you're interested in what we do, I'll click through the presentation in a moment, but if you want to get involved, we're always looking for people to work with us, especially on site in other parts of the world. And the main project I'll introduce today, if the video keeps playing, is the Safety Net project, which I'll introduce in a moment, but we have, basically we're setting up women's shelters and children's shelters all over the world, for people trying to escape domestic and or political violence, and providing technology, but also training in web development, training in being electrified, if that's what's really needed to keep you going, in fashion, in making clothes, in supporting yourself so that you don't have to go back to an abusive situation. And within that, we're looking for partners who can help us to make the garments, which we'll be presenting at SIGGRAPH again this year in the Cyber Fashion Show of New York. Wearing our monkey corset, but here we go. If you want to know how that works, then I'll just keep clicking through. Can you hear if I just keep shouting? So this is the Smart Lab and our robot baby. We'll just introduce, it's not really time to introduce the team, but what I will say is there are several, each year we have several major projects running. We're a group of professional dancers, theater makers, filmmakers, sculptors, painters, musicians who work with engineers, haptic environment designers, wearable technology designers, smart textile designers, and broadcasters around the world to try to create technology tools that real people need that other people will pay for, and then to make them accessible and, whenever possible, free. Our main populations that we try to reach, particularly with the wireless tools, are women who, for whatever reason, need some kind of help that they can't announce verbally, and that they need some kind of quite quiet, discreet, and well-hidden sensor. And this is one of the dresses that hides some of our sensors, which I will not show you today. But they're basically garments that people might wear. This is one of the evening dresses. There's also some other stuff I'll show you in a moment. The other main community we try to serve is people with disabilities, and in our case, mainly people with extreme disabilities, people who can't speak, advanced cerebral palsy, spinal bifida. So there's quite a lot of work which I won't show today, but which is much more about not just wheelchair depth, but assistive technologies which allow people who can't any longer move their own bodies voluntarily to move in rich 3D environments and to move with some of us who can lift and help to move people, and then to develop new triggers, mainly wireless triggers with accelerometers and other kinds of bioeffective feedback devices as well, drawing on heart rate and skinless ones, which can allow people who have needs that they want to express creatively to express them themselves and to tell us what they want to make in a big performance. So very, very briefly, he's just going to tell me when I have to shut up, so I'm going to keep talking very fast. We have our main projects at the moment are here on the side of our website, and at the right-hand banner always tells you what's live now. So of the 30-odd projects that are archived on the site, these are the four we're working on at the moment, and if you want to get involved, please do. So I'll just jump through. The Innovation Center is based at Central St. Martin's with the BBC and a load of industry partners with Design Lab, Smart Textiles. And Smart Lab basically is the link to the communities who are otherwise underserved, including a large group of children in the developing world who are learning to program through Microsoft and to make new tools which Microsoft will then distribute for other children around the world. That's all on the Innovation Center side, which I won't go into. The HOPE project, I'll go to very, very quickly, is a network of medical doctors across the United States. It was started by a colleague at Johns Hopkins and Harvard, who basically, I'll just jump to our our conspirators page. It's a networking of hospitals where they want kids to be able to use games, and particularly wireless games in hospital, and to look at, to do serious professional studies about the way that children in hospital use games, because in the old days they were traveling libraries with books, and now kids are given video games. Many of them are violent. Most of them require some physical dexterity of the hands or good vision, and a lot of the kids we're aiming at don't have one or either of those. And a lot of the kids raise the heart rate and raise the level of competition in standard games. So what happened about 3 years ago is a group of medical doctors, here's one, in her alter ego, a group of medical doctors found us and asked us to make some new games for kids that would use breathing mechanisms and the mind games kind of tools to help kids to calm down, to play non-competitive games, which build roles through movement and haptics and all of that. And the study that's being done by the medical doctors here in the HOPE project, HOPE stands for Hospital-Based Online Resistant Pediatric Environment. And it's running from Baltimore and Harvard across the US, and now we're soon, we hope, going to set up at Great Ormond Street, we hope. We're looking for other London hospitals. I'm at Crumlin in Dublin, and we are the team, and one of the participants has actually recreated us all as characters. These characters change week by week, and it's always interesting to see what we look like. This is the main creator, Ruben Bathmas. Microsoft has recently come on as a partner for this project. What the Smart Labs role is in this project is to make the new games, and we made one called Trust, which I'll introduce in a moment. Oh God. Look how I look this week. Good work. Basic ideas that the kids in coaching, I'm skipping right over that in middle classroom. The kids in the hospital help us to decide how they want us to be represented, how our on-site workshops with the children, we do storytelling, all kinds of other creative workshops with kids in assisted care, kids in burn units, kids who don't want to look at themselves on the screen, in webcams, but who might want to be represented in other forms, also with adults in a parallel project called Open Window, which is running from Dublin from St. James's Hospital. That's a quite similar project, just looking not at gaming, but at using wireless sensors and also simple webcams to allow people to connect with their families at home. So, for instance, adult leukemia patients who have to go through all those levels of decontamination, who can't have visitors, who can't go home and see their children, who may be using hair or otherwise not looking at their best during in the middle of the cycle of treatment, can use the system to communicate, to look out the same window with their family, to watch the same TV program, to do homework together, etc. So I can't go into that right now, but that's not the problem. Trust, I'll show you at the speed of light. Trust is a project and also now a charity set up through the Children's Health Fund, which if you don't know it, it's a Paul Simon set up. Children's Health Fund is a traveling music van initially to take music and creative technology to kids in urban poorer areas who couldn't get into to hear music. That charity and the Carl Sagan Trust helped us to set up a charity called Trust, givetrust.org. And the Trust project has developed a new kit which allows haptic webcam-based wireless sensors, which are, we hope, soon to be free, we're lucky, and haptic chair built by Brian Duffy, the robotics guy from the Media Lab Bureau, to interact with a game which operates by movement. And I'll just flip through a few slides and I'll go to the other main project I'm going to tell you about. I don't think we have any of the new images up here, unfortunately. Let me just check. We just did a new iteration. Oh, here we go. Here's some of the characters. This is the version of the game we made in Singapore. We were in residence with BBC and NTU Game Lab from January to April this year, working at a KK Children's Hospital there. And the children there wrote the stories they wanted to tell. So this giraffe that you see second over is a giraffe called Yasmin, and it was created by a seven-year-old girl who's kind of bipedo, who in the week-long workshops, when we asked, what would you like to be, what characters do you want to have represented, what do you want to be in this 3D world when you sit in a chair and you move into the world, she said she wanted to be a giraffe, she wanted to sit up straight, she wanted to be able to fly, she wanted to be taller than other people, more elegant, and she wanted to be able to swim. So that's what you can do in the game from Yasmin's point of view, and that's what the chair allows her to do through her characters and some of these other the other characters. Everywhere we go, the children themselves draw the pictures, help us to write the storyline, and then we make a new version for them. So this is just the character set for the most recent version, what I should say, that the character on the left, the little angel creature, is actually my sister. We call her Archangel Jenny. She funded the first iteration of the game before we had any money, and helped us to let it fly into the Carl Sagan Monthly of Children's Hospital in the Bronx. And she basically appears on the donation site. So if parents have lost children, or if corporate sponsors want to fund a hospital or a kids union anywhere in the world to have a new version of the game made for them, you can go to givetrust.org and the angels will lead you around. You can make your own angel, customize it, drag it around as a little chocolate creature, give it a name and send it into the world with a message or a banner that you want to send, maybe a remembrance of someone you lost or maybe another message, but not a corporate advertising message. I haven't had time to tell you more, but that's all kind of up on the website. And now to the main project, which is live at the moment, which is the Safety Net Project. And I'll just kind of show you the website very briefly. The website doesn't say a great deal about what we do, much like the Smart Lab website, and that's deliberate. If we were too clear about what we do all the time, it would be harder to give some of the tools away for reasons. Those of you who are involved in making technology, those of you who are involved in this kind of stuff know how hard it is to give stuff away when there's background IP involved and you're trying not to sell stuff. So let me just show you really quickly. Safety Net is, I'm blind as a bat, I guess, pardon me, remember. Who we are is perhaps important if you want to get involved in Safety Net. It tells you on the site how to find us and what we're up to. We're basically working mainly from Morocco and India at the moment, and the slides from, we spent 8 years on sites in Morocco and are now building up in Mumbai and Aladdin, a women's shelter there. If you want to get involved, this tells you. Basically, the UN has been partly supporting us. The rest of the team is there. There's multiple employers involved. And I think under Aladdin, there's some of the women involved in the women's site in India. Basically, an attorney in Alibag, which is a rural community, about an hour and a half outside of Mumbai, has recently given her family home to set up as a shelter for younger women escaping domestic violence, but also women who have lost their husbands, because it's still the case in some of those villages that once you're widowed, your husband's family won't take you back in, and neither will your original family. So there's a whole other layer of women who need to find ways to support themselves. And we are using primarily mobile phone technology to connect the women in these sites for the simple reason that they have electricity 2 hours a day if they're coming. So most of the technologies that we might want to use with them simply will not work. We have to look at wireless and cheap communication tools that can send signals more discreetly but also more realistically for them. Okay, I'm going to skip the rest of that and hopefully just show you a little tiny bit of the video, like 2 minutes. And this is just we won an award from Lifetime TV, the women's TV channel in the States, for volunteer service. So this is for them. It's a public service announcement.
Secure and moderated child violence.
I'll just let it play behind me while I close in sort of 2 minutes. I can't show you anymore, but this brings up and creates all our haptic and robotic interfaces, by the way. The main point of safety net is that it started, and this is really why I wanted to come here and say this before I run away. Safety net didn't start as an anti-domestic violence program. It started when I was with the University of BBC. We were invited to Morocco, Stuart Hall and Stephen Reed and myself, to teach about women's studies, Irish political and African culture. They asked us to come back. We went back over and over the years, and we found out that actually they didn't really need our techniques. None of that was useful. What they needed was access to communication in safe places and to websites. And it took 8 years to build up the cyber cafe network up and down the country, and then to provide wireless tools for them. We don't advertise what they are on the website. You can't get into the real site from the website. This is an information site. If you really want to get into the site, but obviously we can't figure out how to do that easily. But if anyone you know wants to get involved, either because they need help or because they want to help, they just need to contact me or one of the team listed on the website. And there's an entirely different process to get into the actual project. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Elizabeth has to leave quite early. If there are any questions now, why don't you ask them? And we'll just take a couple of minutes to take the question and say any of those things that she presented while this passing back happens over here.
I'd say you've got some
brilliant
projects going on. I'm wondering if you're
coming for? Good question. All over the place. We've had a lot of money from the European Commission for a project called Radical, which we had a lot of money from the BBC. We still do projects with the BBC. We do a few consultancies for Microsoft and the developing world. We apply for private donations for foundation grants. We've had some money from the Arts Council, all over the place. But basically, we spend at least half of every week applying for funding, and just like our videos. What we don't do is take any funding that comes with strings attached and doesn't allow us to give projects. And a lot of what we do involves motion capture. There's a lot of other projects I'm not showing you where the dance technology work for disabled involves a lot of motion capture and motion tracking. Because the army system of the world currently funds most motion tracking and motion capture studios, we don't take that money either, so we're quite limited in where we fund.
So one very quick question, I must say, I'm really very impressed with this presentation. I just wonder, do you have any big projects involving big corporates like Microsoft and helping them get
into? Yeah. Obviously, I did, and for years and years, wouldn't have considered taking their money under any circumstances. The reason we do now is because there's a whole separate pot of money available, which is entirely charity-based, and it's run by a man I've known for 20 years on the NGO circuit, who himself has been involved in projects for 20 years. Yeah, it's Microsoft Community Affairs. It's entirely separate from research and from the corporate funding. It comes with no strings attached. It's a charity like everything else. Yeah, and it's not even his private money. That's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Community Affairs is a division of the legal team, and they're set up as a charity to give money to fields that wouldn't otherwise be funded. And generally a good thing, and run by a really solid God.
Is there one more question? Or sorry, we just have to move on. Unless it's a good one, like it's a yes or no question.
Goodbye.
Okay, good. Well, thank you again very much. And, next presenter is Jo Walsh, who's just done a book signing outside. I'll plug her book for her, Mapping Hats with O'Reilly. And so, you know, if you're all impressed by her presentation, you should read the book or even buy it.
Yeah. Great. All right, so I'll keep this fairly short, as I was roped in at the last minute. I wanted to use this message broadcast the opportunity to talk about some of the work that we've been doing with Wireless London over the last 8 months or so. Wireless London is a quango, really, that saw established a little bit of bootstrap arts council funding, and we've been able to use this to build what started out as a distributed node database that was going to replace consumer.nets or web database of open mind access points, which then turned into a kind of spatial information counter portal service, and is now mutating again into something else entirely, subject to cultural pressures. So here's the basic view of what we have right now on the website, which is map.wirelesslondon.info, and what also appears as the splash page on your open access capture port, your open access gateway, if you install a little bit of capture port software. The map you see underneath is a slightly old snapshot of the OpenStreetMap.org-based map. There are local listings from London.openguides.org. There's, you know, adding images from Flickr, and hopefully we're planning to plug into the event.org social calendaring system, or to one of the other social calendaring systems if they get there first. So here's what we're planning to do with this project next. But in October and then again in March, saw a lot of other people involved in organizing a couple of open seasons, particularly the one in March is a series of collaboratively programmed events. And the activity for that starts in October, so people want to be able to use our Capture Portal service to express things not just about what's in the area or what events might be going on, but to be able to find the connections around the edges to try and discover, as Ted Nelson, I think, said, you know, what you see is what you could know. So once someone's registered with our service, which is a simple question of installing a little bit of client software on our access point, we're working with OpenWare and the Linksys WRT right now. And this is what you're starting to be able to do. Everything on the splash page that you see is editable, contributable. If you find errors in the map, go to OpenStreetMap. If you don't see your local favorite place, go to OpenGuides, and we provide gateway interfaces into all these services, and then collect back in RSS or other flavors of XML, RDF-XML, what these sites are generating. So here's my little picture of the world at the moment. World is London, representing the ability to express statements, facts about people and things, OpenGuides and OpenStreetMap, dealing with the spatial. And all this, when it comes together, it's going to be called Nodal. That's the name of the event series in March. And one thing I've discovered, or I'm discovering, is that interesting new kinds of inference about the connectedness of different kinds of information becomes possible when you know where someone is, when someone is. Information starts flowing towards them, and you can make loose connections around the edges of the domain just by the fact that someone who appeared at this place at this time, an hour before this event was due to happen, means that this collective of people who are also nearby. I mean, it's getting a bit carried away into technocratic hand-waving dreams, but there is a reasonable foundation for a lot of what's going on. Just a quick look deeper. Here's some of the spatial information that we're getting from OpenStreetMap, and how this is being used to build an open mind model, which we can then pour into our backend. The backend is just an RDF data store with various RSS gathering interfaces. So why am I bubbling at you lot about this right now? Partly because I want people to start running this thing, and one of the historic problems that the Free Networks movement and set of activities has had in London is that we've never really, really had a flourishing network, and I'm now really feeling the lack of this network infrastructure. So I would urge anyone who is running an open wireless access point, who's interested in this, to start with just this bootstrap, you are here, and this stuff nearby that people have recommended. Forget all the hand-wave social software, share calendaring stuff for now, but that will come. And then anyone who comes and interacts with that access point adds a little bit of sense to the model. And here's the basic model right now of the information sources that we're working with, and the kind of coalition of little projects that we're plugging together. So, if you have geo-annotated sources of RSS RDF data, I would love to be able to get my hands on them. If you're interested in running the software under access point, that would be fantastic. If anyone actually wants me to help in hacking the code base, which is on Python at the moment, and is getting increasingly wide-ranging, then that would also be great. So, I think that's about all the messages that I had to deliver today. Thank you very much for having the book. Matthew Hanks.
I hope you're taking notes. There's going to be a test.
Okay.
Any quick questions for Joe while Robin's setting up?
There's a lot that can be negotiated. Socially, you can persuade someone of getting what we're working with recently is being a firmware, a mesh firmware developed by these people in Germany, which they're using to then provide network access so you just have a couple of big downlinks to the internet and have a cloud of about 50 70 modes. So I think that's one interesting way to possibly go is to say, get this little box. You won't even need to have a direct connection to the internet and try and seed a mesh of nodes running this stuff. I would say that's one way. Otherwise, if you're in a specific area and we can try and connect with people, come to Wireless London, put yourself on the Wireless London map, which is it's still a bit rough around the edges, but we're working on it. Come and talk to someone and we can see who we can hook you up with. I think that's the other.
Okay, thanks. So, and now I have the pleasure to present Mr.
Name?
Robin. Yeah. Robin from the Space Hijackers.
Hello. I come from a group called Space Hijackers, which is a kind of internet organized bunch of troublemakers. We've done a variety of projects. A lot of it's all to do with kind of looking how public space works and kind of who controls things and kind of how you can mess around with it. So we've done everything from we recently had this an architecture week, which is where we did a variety of events, everything from kind of taking people around shops and showing all the little tricks at supermarkets and all the rest of them will kind of pull on you to try and make you buy more things. Really devious stuff like things like you'll be walking down through the supermarkets and pushing the trolley and it'll be clicking away on the tiles on the floor. And then you'll hit a slightly more expensive aisle and they'll put slightly smaller tiles on the floor and so your trolley will click faster. So you'll think you're going faster, so you'll slow down and you'll spend more time kind of perusing these aisles, you know. And so we did a little tour around the shops, around the West End and stuff, kind of pointing out all the little tricks. We also had things like a big pirate party, which were quite into pirates, and so we invaded. Fortunately, we used to have an island just off from my house. There was like a little island in the middle of the Docklands that we kind of rowed out to and as pirates and took over. And the council had connected it to the mainland now, so we took over a traffic island at the. This is the bottom of Park Lane, this one. We decided, being pirates and obviously not having any power there, we brought a little pirate radio station with us. And so we were broadcasting from this island with a little pirate radio station. And everyone had brought along stereos. And so, called Chin Chin to the same frequency. So it was really nice. It was a big sound system. But you could, if the police turned up, we could just scatter. It turned out they did turn up. Although we didn't realize for a while, they'd actually been sitting there in an undercover van, monitoring us for the evening. And they seem to turn up to quite a lot of bad things nowadays. maybe as a result of the kind of biggest projects, I think, the most troublesome, have been, and you might have been to one, I don't know, but we've been holding parties on the Circle Line. Basically the deal is that we get as many people as we can, we'll kind of advertise it beforehand. I'll get that one. And it's basically kind of little spontaneous parties on the Circle Line. Unfortunately, rather more people than we expect seem to be turning up to them nowadays. We planned for 200, there was maybe 600 to 800 people turned up to, this was the second one, the last one. We managed to fill, I don't know how many trains of people, because everyone just brings their own sound systems and drinks, and the deal is that, the party's happening in the tunnels, so it was kind of to try and disguise it from British Transport for this. So basically, you hit a station and everyone's quiet and kind of drumming their thumbs and nothing really going on, and then you hit a tunnel and the sound systems were kicking, and we had to tequila bars, and we had, we even made the, eventually we had like these lights for the colour gels for all the strip lights. Just go out to the, and this is one of the, kind of, we had like amplifiers wired up, with kind of wires going through the thing you can strap an amplifiers to. So they were quite nice, but unfortunately, they're not going to be happening for a little while now. Oh, naked, yeah. Naked pole dancing men. just get that. One of the things I was going to talk about today, being a technological based thing, was a new project that we've just started. We've had this. We've had this website running for a while, which is MMS Space Hijackers.org, which is basically like a, using mobile phones, you can kind of take a picture with your mobile phone, and then you text it to Matt, who's at MMS Space Hijackers.org. You can't quite see it on here, but basically it comes up online pretty sharpish, like within a couple of minutes, and so it's kind of live, so we'll have kind of live footage of for example, that one was we challenged the government to game cricket on my day. And you know, they'll come from different events. This is, we had a set up an office in the city. And, we couldn't afford real office space, so we hired a car park space and set up an office in there. But the newest one we're doing, which is the one I wanted to talk about today, is to do with the whole ID cards. That we thought, if Mr. Charles Clark loves kind of surveillance so much, this hasn't been launched yet, but basically Bill, we turn into the most surveilled man in the company. there's nothing on there just yet, but basically the plan is we're going to be launching it in a week or two, and it basically means that anywhere in the world that sees it can take a photo of him, send it in, and there'll be a live online kind of journal of everything he's doing at every moment in the day. we want to eventually set it up so that we can have like a text message kind of system, so that we've got a few people that might be able to slip as his kind of program of where he's going to be when. And so ideally, people will be able to register with their postcode and their mobile number or something like that. It'll send out an automated text saying, it's in your area, it's going to be here. Going to go and snap him on there. And it'll just be really nice, because he must get like his photo taken anyway, just because of who he is. And now it's going to be even more paranoid. Like, on the 23rd of April, he had this for dinner. And he's doing this. It's live, it's up online, it's mmscharlesclark.com, but it's not, we've not kind of launched it yet. But if you go to the main site, which is the spacehijackers.org, you can sign up as a secret agent, Space Hijackers secret agent, and we'll let you know when it's going to get launched. And you can come and join in the fun. I guess that's about it. There's not really much else to talk, but that's a little sample of what we get up to anyway. Thank you.
Brilliant, so we seem to be running to time. We have about 8 minutes, just under, for any questions that you might have to any of the panelists. So it's yours, go ahead.
Go on.
Okay, Hamidin, you had a question earlier on. Come on, what happened? What was it?
This is
again.
What's the smart app used? Open source or create open source tools?
Yeah. We tend to, because we work with the BBC as well, we tend to use and then make open source tools whenever possible. We have some of the haptics and some of the bespoke systems for people with very particular disabilities, obviously, open source systems. But our aim then is to use the funding that we get to build specific systems, text-to-speech services or robotic arm, whatever it might be, for an individual who needs something. But then to hire researchers, and we run PhD programs, which gets people involved in thinking about how you can extrapolate from the needs of one person or one project and make something that can be more generally useful. So that's the basic idea. And then to try to make tools that would encompass a lot of people's needs, and then to try to make that stuff
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what was the question about the last time? The question was about the social imperative to why someone's involved in the process. Does your system have any sort of capability where if we lived in the world where everyone's nice and everyone's just open, everyone could have a hundred connection to the internet free just by routing basic instead of the ASL up in the all the way through?
Answer A is I'm just a software person. Answer B is yeah, I see this as a kind of counter structure plan B, and I think a lot of people do. And I don't know whether there are big fulfillment dreams and infinite down the between pretending this. It's more a kind of fallback plan in case any of the bigger networks don't persist. I also see it as a way of being able to bootstrap a lot of other local activity that has a conceptual fit with this infrastructure, particularly community currency systems, also a lot of collaborative mapping stuff. So that's our main areas of trying to join the edges with the wireless networks and say, what is this infrastructure for? Why are we building it? Is it just about backhaul? Is it about local services? We still don't know. I like to sell advertising on that basis, where you get charged a trivial amount to send a message a short distance, and then exponentially more to send it a long way, or from a number of outlets to a number of outlets. Just because, not that I really want to sell advertising, but I'd like to explore that as a sustainability model for this, so we don't have to be reliant on the fate of larger businesses or of any grant-funded apps, which has been the case here.
Yeah, hi. This is for Joe again. Down in Kingston, where I'm from, the council provide Wi-Fi nodes. There's like 20 or 30 of them. Is that sort of common throughout London? And have you had any inspiration sort of getting your software and your information onto those free Wi-Fi nodes as well?
Not really. There's some new BT-backed government-funded initiative in Shoreditch where they're trying to do WiMAX stuff. And they're talking there, commercial services are showing down to the user. That's not sustainable. We're going to charge £3.50 a week, which comes out of almost £15. And is the Kingston service free to access?
Yeah, it's completely free. There's 20 or 30 nodes through the
air. A lot of US cities run these things as well. Apparently this is causing tension with commercial providers also.
Yeah, there's a website set up by some American free networks groups, legal people, called MiniWireless.net, and that is kind of trying to expose and get support for municipal wireless projects that have pissed off US telcos and businesses who find it anti-competitive. The government should be providing services for people who get from their tax revenue.
I was thinking there's some project to start paying up the street wireless and provide free wireless access.
That's all you got. Yeah, has anybody had any experience of free wireless, municipally provided wireless in Upper Street?
I think it's right.
Yeah, that's been my experience too, is that the press release is out, never met anybody who's used it. In fact, most people rely on the default free network, which is just unconfigured, which is what most hardware providers do by default, so that people don't phone them up and say it doesn't work. And
which will get you arrested in the US now.
Yeah. Yes. You can easily see a situation in which you start to get overlooked in with the apps that appear behind it in a very well-founded way. If I now see come up as hardware and we can make them up as services, and embed Linux in one of these things, and we can see a situation in which we have into the real thing is to put things in one. That's what I'm trying to avoid.
Do the panelists have any questions for the audience? Well, I think 2 minutes to shuffle quietly out of the room is perfectly acceptable. Thanks very much to all the panel and to everyone.